CliffCentral.com.
Yebo, CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. It's just 2 days left of August, and then we're into the month of September and a brand new season of spring. The lights are on. Everything's warm, beautiful, starting to get to the green that we expect it to be this time of year. I just love it. It's my favorite time. And now that my birthday's over, I can stop stressing about that too. Bolelo, we got a very nice, rude comment from somebody here who said, Daniela, she said, "You don't intentionally hurt someone's feelings. It may be a consequence of creating your own boundaries. But if we teach a kid that it's okay to hurt people's feelings, they'll all end up like Mbulelo."
No, then let's not do that.
Yeah.
Who said that?
Daniela.
Quite right, Daniela. We don't want that. No, we don't want that.
You took that like a champion, Mbulelo. You've been trained. You must have a psychiatrist for a mother.
You know, Daniela sounds offended, and she's entitled to be offended. What she's not entitled to be is correct, you know? So
well,
if that's how she feels, c'est la vie.
You did say she was right here, so you,
yeah, well, you got
choose your side now. Anyway, all right. So a couple of things to get to this morning that I know is on our various minds. First of all, can we just talk a little bit about this Cristiano Ronaldo thing? Because it seems like a very big deal. Now, I know he's the world's greatest player, him and Lionel Messi, and that, you know, there's some people who think Lionel Messi's slightly better, some people who think Ronaldo's better, but the two of them are absolutely incredible, insane players. He's gone to Man United. How did that happen?
So he's gone home. The prodigal son has returned.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. I mean, so there's a league called Serie A, which is the Italian league, which is actually a bum league, and he made a mistake of going there last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't work out. Eventually, he saw that, as Figile Mbalula said, they are a bunch of losers.
Right.
So he kind of engineered. He's probably got the biggest sports agent in the world, arguably, in George Mendes. Mm-hmm. They engineered a move out of, it got ugly, out of Juventus. And he was on his way to Manchester City, which is the big rivals owned essentially by the UAE, the Etihad Group. And at the very last minute, Manchester United stepped in there and said, "This ain't happening." They offered him a deal, and it broke the internet. It totally did. Yeah, again. Yeah. So, you know, we've had two of the biggest moves, I believe, in sports entertainment history happen in the last month in Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, you know. So it's just, what an incredible time. The English Premier League cannot stop winning as a TV show. It continues to be the most enthralling viewing, whether you're into sport or not.
Yeah.
Just nothing matches those numbers.
That's why I bring it up. Usually I would pay very little attention to sports stories, but as you say, this one broke the internet. The other one that I don't care about at all, but it also broke the internet, was the Belgian Grand Prix, because there was such bad weather. It was raining.
Ooh.
And it was foggy, and it was apparently very dangerous for these guys to drive. So they cancelled the whole thing.
So we're going to have Spike Ballantyne, Spike the car guy, on social media, our very own Spike Ballantyne, on later. I mean, he's like a fundy, right, of motorsports. And we'll talk about it. But for me, being a cricket fan, football fan, you know, NFL, is how do they not have built spare days into the calendar for this? Like, it's probably a $15 billion industry.
Sure.
Build two or three spare days. Like, weather happens. Especially, like, your races on Europe. It's awful there all the time. And farcical to have a two-lap race be the result. And now Verstappen gets half points. I mean, what a joke.
So we can hear from the real experts on Cliff Central Sport a little bit later on today. Make sure you tune in live. Spike will be on at, what, 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock, yeah, 1 p.m. South African time.
Excellent.
It'll be good stuff, yeah.
All right, very good. Leanne Moll, you've got a little trick question for us this morning. How old is Exclusive Books? Because just like the music shops, which have gone out of business, there's this constant kind of lingering threat in book circles that bookshops are going to close down. I don't believe they'll ever close down because people love books. And people will – there are enough people who read books – who don't want to order them on Kindle or get them from Amazon. They actually want to go in and feel the thing and pick it up and go, okay, this is a book I need to buy. But Exclusive Books, I have no idea how old they are. I think they must be, what, about 20 years old?
No, more than that.
Guesses?
No, more than that. I would guess 45 years old.
What?
Well, I also thought they were about 20 years old. I mean, I remember when, in my mind, Exclusive Books opened, it was these beautiful stores in malls, and I mean, it's within my living memory. But no, Exclusive Books are turning 70.
Yeah, makes
sense.
No
way.
Yeah, because I remember when I moved to Johannesburg, or and I was young, I remember Exclusive Books. No, I mean, not as in its current form being glamorous, but wow. Yeah, no, I remember it when I was very young, and I'm nearly at Bali stage now.
So that it started with the founders, Philip and Pamela Joseph. And I remember it's still very much a family business.
Yeah.
In that I contacted them about their social media services.
Yeah.
And they said, no, very strictly in-house, all very family-oriented, which is quite amazing. But they bought a second-hand bookstore in Hillbrow in 1951.
Wow.
After 50 years later, they opened their first online store towards the 2000s. And sure. I didn't know this, but there are only 36 stores in South Africa. I somehow thought there might have been more. There are two others in neighboring countries as well.
Okay.
I just think it's amazing. It was always quite a magical place to go into. And what was really amazing is that when the two started at the Josephs, they wanted something that cultivated a culture of reading,
mm-hmm.
so that it did feel special when you went in there. It wasn't just like going into a dusty old bookstore.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is that that has run true and still stands today, where you can now eat within an Exclusive Books. It's a whole culture, which I really think is amazing. I'm looking at a photograph of their first store, the outside of it. And it was just literally a tiny little store in the squash between five or six other stores.
Wow. I had no idea. I mean, so this is all news to me. 70 years seems like a hell of a long time ago. But if you think about it, that's, 1950s is not, it's not 1,000 years. it doesn't feel that long ago, but it's incredible. I would have said that they were around maybe since the fall of apartheid. That's kind of where I would have said they started to come into play, but obviously not.
Absolutely.
Do you go to bookstores?
No. Yes, I do. Obviously not lately.
Yeah.
Things have been a bit different. But before that, yes, absolutely. And I do like going into a especially dusty, stinky old, not stinky, but book-smelling old secondhand store. I love those.
Those are my favorite, too. I mean, most of the books that I've bought, I've bought from bookstores. There are a few that I've ordered on Amazon and that kind of thing. But I actually like the real books. I can't read a Kindle. I've tried. I don't like the way that works. I prefer to actually hold the book, fold it over when I'm halfway through it and pick it up the next night or whatever. So I'm old school about this stuff.
I was just going to say, ironically, this is one place where I wish they would be more talkative. Like, I don't want we've been here where I don't want the person packing my groceries talking to me, but ironically, what you need is the packing, the ladies who pack groceries, they should be working actually at bookstores, because I want to talk to the bookstore people about book recommendations, but they don't talk. They just, can I help you? And then they go away.
I don't know, because the recommendations thing there is a strange thing. Like, I've never understood why there are five shelves full of cooking books, and there are five shelves full of religion books, and there's one tiny little shelf with history or biographies or whatever it is. Because those are the things I'm interested in. So, again, you've got to go in there with an agenda. Otherwise, you could spend all day just wandering around looking at stupid stuff that you're not that interested in. I go straight into those bookstores, and I know exactly where I need to go. And I'll always find something I like in those sections. But you know what's also nice about a bookshop, as opposed to like an online version or a Kindle version, is like you get pictures and – you get to see some of these books are so beautifully made. I mean, you know, you get those huge big books with like photographs in them and magnificent drawings and that kind of thing. To me, that's worth way more than the actual written content in the book. Sometimes those drawings and pictures are just absolutely astonishing. That's the stuff I like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so anyway, that's Exclusive Books turning 70. That's quite incredible. And then this is really interesting. Apparently, there are Bitcoin influencers and traders who've paid a very heavy price for flaunting excessive wealth on Instagram. Some of these people have been robbed. Some have lost their lives. This is all happening online now, but I've never understood why people want to use Instagram as a place to boast about wealth, because we know, for example, that SARS, you know, the revenue service, they look at Instagram. We know this. We've spoken to people from SARS, and they actually check people's profiles to see what they're doing with their money. And if they see that you're suddenly driving a Bentley or a Rolls Royce, that sets off alarm bells at SARS. Don't put this crap on social media. All these people who've got showing off their bags and showing off their private jets and showing off their fancy shoes, it's like you're looking for trouble. But clearly this lesson is not sinking in for some people.
No, definitely not. And they really do live in their own little bubble. And it just seems to be on the rise that there are these specific criminal gangs that follow these influencers. And they wait for moments like when somebody's posted that they've, you know, taken their dog shopping.
Yeah.
They know that at that point the house is empty. But there are specific influencers who've been affected by this, and most of them are robberies, but some of them are like quite big attacks by these gangs. You know, you've got pictures of people sitting in the garden with packets of money lying on the floor, and they're trying to act all gangster with their chains and things like that. There's also a platform called Rich Kids of Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like a one-stop shop for gangs and thieves. And it's believed that 78% of burglars use social media to case potential victims.
I can believe it.
You know, there have been some incidents where it's been a robbery where nothing bad has really happened. And obviously they're going for the high-ticket items that they've seen on Instagram, like handbags and shoes and even cash. But in some cases, you know, these influencers, children are involved in the robberies.
Oh, my God.
Where they've been a threat. There's another influencer who was stabbed 16 times.
Yeah.
He survived the stabbing. They also stole his French bulldog as well during the robbery. That's something that we're seeing as well happening. I mean, these dogs are worth like $14,000.
I've got to ask this question. How come these gangsters who you see, like, they're real gangsters, they have money all over the place, if they didn't show off how much money they had, they wouldn't need the bodyguards, they wouldn't need the special protection, they wouldn't need a house with, like, extraordinary security facilities. If you just kept it quiet, you wouldn't need to spend all this money trying to make yourself secure, dummy. Just like, don't show bags of cash. What do you think people are? Well, I just saw that this rapper who lives in Joburg has put up a post with like thousands and thousands of rands spread out on his bed. You don't think that makes people want to go and rob you? They can find out where you live, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is that most of these people have become famous for showing off their stuff. So the more they show off their stuff, the more sponsorships and deals that they get. So it's a vicious circle.
Apparently,
you know how guys are.
Yeah.
So, Leanne, I don't know what the numbers say, but I imagine it's mostly guys. It's like, not sure if you've ever seen somebody who wasn't that guy, maybe in school or whatever, gets kind of rich, gets the beautiful girlfriend. He cannot wait to show you. So, like, if you've never had cash, if you've never had those things, how else, how else do you know how to live with it? You know what I mean?
It makes you feel special. So it's like it gives you social cachet, social points. But at the same time, I mean, surely you learn fairly quickly that most of the people who are following you on this may be like fans and they may be thrilled to see that you're doing well, but there's going to be a percentage of people who are just consumed with jealousy and want to bring you down. And
you
don't want to attract that attention. It's just the worst thing you could possibly do.
So one of the guys is a cryptocurrency trader. His name's Wesley Pisano Santarem from Brazil, 19 years old.
Yeah.
And he was flaunting his lavish lifestyle on social media. And he was going to the hairdressers with a friend. And they were ambushed and attacked.
Jesus.
He was shot dead at the wheel of his Porsche Boxster. And the friend was left injured.
So the gunman
apparently just unleashed this hail of bullets.
So in that case, it wasn't even that they wanted to steal his stuff. They just hated him.
Yeah.
Just pure hatred. Like you,
pure hatred and jealousy.
You know, what drives me crazy is like you can live your whole life and you never have to encounter this stuff, and God willing, you never will. But there are actually people out there in the world who hate you so much just from seeing you on Instagram that they want to kill you. It's crazy, right?
But don't you think this is a reality? And I'd love to hear from both of you. You've been in the limelight far longer than I have. Is that people want you to do well, not too well. Like, and that doesn't need to be a $1 million bag.
Yeah.
Like, I experienced it in life, and maybe it's just me, but people want you to do well, not too well.
Yeah, that's a horrible fact, but it's true. The moment some people get over a certain level of wealth or success, they really do have to hire bodyguards. They have to fly privately. They have to make sure their kids aren't taken hostage. I mean, what a horrible way to live. Now you must pay the price for being successful by having to isolate yourself and by having to get private security and all of that stuff. I think it's ridiculous that there's so many people in South Africa who do have private security who don't need it, because I think for some people it's a status symbol. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, especially politicians, they like having private security around them the whole time. They like having the big heavies in the black suits with the guns packing the heat. They like to have those people following them around. It makes them feel special. But I don't know that there are that many people who actually are living in permanent fear that they need to be protected. I think a lot of it is just ego. I think a lot of it is just, look at me. I'm so important and I'm so wealthy and I'm so successful that people are trying to get me, so I need to hire thousands of people or thousands of dollars worth of security every day. It's insane.
It's insecurity. The great Muhammad Ali has an awesome saying for it. So they were asking him about Floyd Mayweather and those types of people, and he said, greatness is having the people embrace you. Greatness is not putting barriers between you and the people.
Yeah.
When you walk with those bounces and whatever, all it shows you're a tiny little man. Warren Buffett and Adrian Gore don't walk around with bodyguards, and they've got money like you will never imagine.
Croesus.
You know?
Just as an aside, apparently those French bulldogs are 30,000 rand each. That's insane.
Looksome.
Yeah, that's a hell of a lot for a dog. I mean, I thought my dog was expensive. And apparently, according to Gareth, Floyd Mayweather travels with $1 million in cash with him at all times, apparently. So then you've got a target on your back. If people know you've got a bag somewhere with $1 million in cash, and that's like a red rag to a bull. There are some people who will just take a chance and do something stupid, right? They're going to be. That's exactly why Kim Kardashian was attacked, according to Daniela. They've been following social media movements and planning her robbery for 3 years. She had some diamonds or something stolen, I think. Isn't that what happened?
She was actually on this list of people that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find now what these celebrities do is they plan ahead their year's content with photographs and things so that they don't post live from where they actually are. They mix it up a little bit. That's what's happening now.
It's quite incredible.
That's why during lockdown, you would have seen photographs of them living their best life on crowded beaches, or not so crowded, even though everyone was in lockdown, because they'd already planned this content.
Speaking of crowded beaches and so on, I saw a video on Facebook yesterday. I actually reposted it of Elton John at some kind of restaurant in the Mediterranean. I think it's in Italy or in southern France. And it's just a normal outdoor restaurant, and people are obviously enjoying the sun, and it looks beautiful, and there's just families there, and old people and young people. It's all a big mix, and they're sitting down at tables eating. And Elton John goes to the DJ box, and he sits down there. I mean, like Elton John's, he must be close to 70, maybe. He's got to be somewhere around there in terms of age, right? And he just suddenly says to the DJ, like, you know, play this song. And he starts singing to his own song, which is so cool. You imagine going to a restaurant expecting just to have lunch, and you get a private Elton John concert, even if it's just one song. That must be one of the coolest things that can happen to you. Especially because
he was in the mood.
Yeah, and he's such
he's
a legend.
74, by the way.
74. There we go. And he sits down. He doesn't get up. He doesn't stand up. And the DJ starts playing his song, and he starts, starts singing along to it, and it's really, really cool. Like, I would love to see something like that. That's never happened to me. Imagine those people. They'll tell that story for the rest of their lives. Carl wants to know, on the subject of people who are sharing their stories about money and doing all this stuff on social media. Carl says, I wonder if Gigaba still has cash in bags. Well, I don't think so anymore, because he's not employed by government anymore, is he? I don't think he has a job right now.
I saw him yesterday.
Where?
In the area I live in. He was at a restaurant. Let me not slate them, but where the Yentas gather. Yeah. He was there, and he pulled him and his buddies in a Geländewagen.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm happy for him. Apparently, there are three Bugattis doing their rounds in Sandton. Talk about a target. Yeah, but you also hear about these stories, and we'll get to collectomania in just a moment or two, but about these people who have, like, really expensive jewelry, and they get targeted by this this Rolex gang, right? Mm-hmm. Who's apparently been, you know, this Rolex gang's been terrorizing Johannesburg for years now, and they find out who has just landed at the airport that's wearing expensive watches or jewelry or whatever, and they follow them home. I mean, I don't want to make anyone paranoid, but this is something that's been doing the rounds now for a good couple of years.
Yeah.
So again,
someone personally who was attacked by them.
Yeah, you don't even have to be putting it on social media. People are still looking, you know, checking what's going on, who's got what. That's quite scary.
So to this point that Leanne's making before we quickly move on is when I was playing football, is they actually handed us lists of accredited guys, because they know what footballers are going to do with money, where to get guys to fix your house, buy watches, buy jewelry. There was an accredited list already that clubs and football agents know,
yeah.
And they kind of hand you that list when you come in because of exactly what Leanne's saying.
Ooh.
So it's a real thing. It's a real thing. I mean, footballers constantly are getting robbed when they're playing football games, because it's just a thing, you know.
So, well, also, you know, people know where they are during that time, because this is a real no. Seriously, if you're on live television playing soccer, then everybody knows. Well, there's no one at your house now, so right, makes sense.
But also, it's so that you don't have your plumber going, "Oh my God, can I have your autograph?" and getting in your face while you're in your private space.
Yeah. Can I fix your toilet, Mr. Messi? yeah, sure.
You'd be Messi. You'd
exactly.
Be Messi.
Yeah. And then they're busy. They're taking photographs of your toilet and like putting them on social media, saying, "This is Lionel Messi's shitter. Like, aren't you impressed?" Anyway. Apparently, someone says here, if someone dropped off Malusi Gigaba in a G-Wagon, is it even his, or is he renting it? Well, remember the last time his wife damaged that other one? It wasn't even his. It belonged to a friend of his. So you never know. People are always putting up a big show, and you don't actually know what they've got in the bank. You don't know what their real value is, because they like to show off. They like to make it seem like they're doing better than they really are. It's such a sickness. Major, major problem. Anyway, we've got to move on. So, it is time for today's episode of Collectomania. This is where we get into the collections that various people, really interesting people, all of them, have in South Africa. Some of them have collected what we were talking about just now, watches or whiskies or pictures or dolls or whatever it might be. And today, Collectomania is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And if you're a collector or you're interested in unusual or interesting things, then please send us an email, because we've found most of our best collections by people just sending us an email saying, hey, I collect this, I collect that, I've got some interesting stories, let me know. So just send me an email, contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will feature you on the show, of course, if you want people to know about your collection. Now, Kevin has the largest collection of plastic monkeys and apes on the planet. So this is really a world record-breaking collection. And according to major collectors worldwide, he is the guy when it comes to this. His collection of over 5,800 figurines dates back to the 1940s. So, Kevin, welcome, man. What an interesting thing to be collecting. Plastic apes.
Yes, sir. Good morning, everybody. Nice. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, nice to
see
you.
Happy birthday for last week, Kev.
Thanks so much, man.
Hope you had fun.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I did. So, Kevin, I'll talk to you in a minute about your surviving COVID, because I want to get through that as well. But before we do any of that stuff, these plastic monkeys, I could see some of them behind you there. What the hell? What the hell kind of thing is this to collect? It's very peculiar.
Okay,
very
so I'll
peculiar.
Tell you, it's very interesting. When I was little, really little, my daddy used to go all over the world, and he used to bring me toys from all over the world.
Right.
And he'd go to Spain and bring me plastic animals from Spain, and he'd bring me plastic animals from Germany and from America and all over the place. And I was fixated by primates, monkeys, when I was little. And I left a whole box of them at my mother's when I moved out. And I found them about 25 years ago, because I'm 53. Like a really old nerd. And I found these little buggers in a box. And so I put them on Facebook. And a friend of mine, arbitrary friend of mine from Europe, asked me, do you know how much they're worth? And I went, no. And he got hold of me via social media, and we spoke, and I took him through every single piece I'd had, and I'd really got some of the really, 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 really rare figurines that had come out, because, and in mint condition, because they'd never been buggered up, you know what I mean?
Right.
A box for classics,
Sure.
And then I started collecting seriously, and I've been collecting seriously for about 17 years, and I have an amazing collection. I've got a few here to show you guys. And some of the really rare things that are worth fortunes.
All right.
The collection is probably on the hundreds of thousands of euros scale.
Wow.
In value.
Who would have known?
I've got figurines here.
Who would have known? Plastic apes. Okay, so take us through some of these. What have we got here on the screen now? These three, like chimps.
Cool.
And then
the one on the left is, I want to just preface this with that little figurine in the front.
Yeah.
Is the figurine that I've used for every single photograph I've taken as a sizing and equivalent figurine. Okay.
So he's your scale. He's your scale model.
He's my scale model. He's been with me for a long time.
Okay.
It's just one of those things. And then on the left hand side is the original. It's called Chap May. Chap May brought out a beautiful line of toys through the 80s, 90s, and to date, actually. And it's a Chinese maker that hasn't knocked off, funnily enough, this is the irony of this picture, hasn't knocked off the toys.
Yeah.
They've made their own molds, okay? And then another Chinese manufacturer has knocked off the other two. So you can see how it's degenerated in its knockoff, like a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you can see the original, and then the other two are knockoffs that have been done by Chinese, but cheaply. And the strength of my collection is based along that. I've collected the original and all the knockoffs. So Britain's Limited brought out toys in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in England, and obviously went around the world selling them, obviously. But all the other people copied them. So they were copied from initially the Britain's Limited lead figurines.
Yeah.
They were made as animals as well in lead, and then everybody realized that their kids chewing on lead, we're going to die.
Right.
So we'll make it in rubber or plastic. And those molds were then used across all the way to China and Hong Kong, and Hong Kong knocked off all these things. There's one picture there I show you of my desk with all the gorillas, standing gorillas and bulging gorillas on that. They're little figurines.
This one.
Not that one.
Wow.
No, not that one. This one. Yeah, there's that's about
spider monkeys. Let me just see what we got here. No.
Those are very rare.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll talk you through them. They're quite interesting. There's a whole bunch of stuff here.
Okay, so let's just look at this quickly, the spider monkeys. Tell us about those.
Okay, so listen, one of the rarest figurines I have is on that picture. The spider monkey on the left-hand side of the picture with the long black tail.
Yes.
And, the biggish one.
Yes.
Okay, that is a WAI, a World Wildlife. It's a Wildlife Artists International, figurine. And they made about 1,500 of each of the figures. And they came out in the 80s.
Sure.
So to find them is incredibly rare. That thing's worth about $500
$600.
Wow. It's an incredibly rare. I've been offered that for that figurine. The one with the capybara and the yellow spider monkey in the middle.
Yes.
That's a Japanese figure. The Japanese bring out miniature figures that are beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. All of them are. So the Japs bring out probably the best figurines, funnily enough.
And Kevin, all of this was just in a box in your mother's garage, and you'd forgotten about it.
Well, none of those. Okay, okay. But a lot of the gorillas and a lot of the Britain's limited stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. A lot of the German stuff.
Okay, so here's some gorillas.
This is about 10 years ago.
Uh huh.
Okay, and there were. They are all gorilla figurines. Okay, so there's two pictures. There's this one and the one next to it that'll actually show you the vastness of that table
Amazing.
Full of figurines.
These are various, like some of them are made out of lead, some of them are plastic.
Nothing. All plastic.
Oh, they're all plastic.
I don't collect anything but plastic, rubber, and a composition figurine. And the composition figurines are a mixture of plastic and a paper mache kind of material that they used to use in the 40s, 50s, and 60s to make these animals. And then they used to, especially in Europe, have steel structures for the animals.
Like an armature.
Inside.
So
they're armature, yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about these. These are the very rare ones, right? These are the Holy Grails.
Okay, so that's one of the Holy Grails. Yes, so there's two sets there. There's a set of monkeys, and there's a set of prosimians. So prosimians are the lemurs, the potos, the eyes. From Madagascar,
yes.
And they are made by a company called Play Visions, okay. And they also had like 2,000 sets for the worldwide collectors. And let me explain something. Here's some of the groups I'm on have got 50,000 people on them. So when you talk about 2,000 sets, I've got two sets of those each, and they are in bags. The second set, those are display ones. So now they're worth about $400 each.
My God.
Especially the lemurs. If you come to me quickly, I'll show you another lemur that's also worth a fortune.
Sure.
I've got it in my hand.
Sure, let's look at this. Go for it.
Okay, so that is a little eye.
Yeah.
Okay, that was made for a magazine in Russia. And one of my Russian collector friends sent it to me, and I'm the talk of the town of that.
That's phenomenal. I'm blown.
That's ridiculous. I know it's quite insane. Don't get me wrong. All right, this is a connoisseur hobby. Trust me. I think I'm a single species collector. You've got to understand that on that 40,000 to 50,000 collector group of plastic animals,
uh-huh.
There are guys there that have got 150,000 figurines.
My God.
But think of it like this: I've got 6,000 odd monkeys and gorillas and chimps and apes.
Yeah.
What about the rhinos, lions, tigers, impala, Banada species that have come out over the... So if you add all of them up, if you choose per species, there's thousands of these figures that have been produced.
Yeah. I mean, I used to have little plastic animals we used to build game reserves in the garden with, and, you know, my brother and I would play with those. That was fun.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, we didn't think that they were worth anything, and we certainly didn't look after them. They were covered in mud.
At the time, they weren't.
No.
At the time, they weren't. They were $5, $3, you know what I mean, for a set of 50, you know what I mean?
Amazing.
50 years later, they were worth a fortune.
Well, you said you've had offers in some of these. Is there anyone who's offered you enough money for you to go, okay, yeah, I'll sell this one?
No.
Still not?
I don't take money for figurines. I trade.
Really?
It's one of my things. Yeah, it's one of my things. If I've got a lot, because we buy job lots,
Yeah.
So what happens is I'll buy in a job lot of figurines. I'll have a whole bunch of figurines and sometimes doubles and triples of figures. And then I obviously want something that guy's got and he wants something I've got and then we trade it and it doesn't matter the value. That's the beautiful thing about this hobby worldwide. The values of these things. I mean, I've traded a Potto, one of those lemurs from Playvisions,
yeah,
for another monkey. The Potto's worth about $600. The other monkey wasn't worth that much money at all, but it fooled a set of monkeys that I didn't have, so it was worth it. Does that make sense?
I love it. I'm just blown away.
It's not about money, man.
This is so...
It's not about money. I want to show you something else. I want to show you two really, really rare ones.
Okay.
I pulled up three really rare ones that you haven't got pictures of. That is a W.H. Miller.
Yeah.
Where am I? There you go. W.H. Miller baboon with baby on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's a waxy plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is another $500 to $600 figurine from America. And then I've got the mandrel version of the same figure. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is from 1945 to 1950, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's also worth the same sort of money. And then I've got a French figure from a company called Starlux. I think I actually sent you a picture of it.
Yeah.
Okay. That is the Langer from Starlux. Okay. That is that's the rarest Starlux figure that you can find. That one.
How much is that worth?
That one, it doesn't really have a price.
Sure.
Because nobody's ever getting it, Gareth.
No, but who's gonna inherit all of these? Who's gonna inherit all your?
Oh, I've got a lovely story with that. I got asked by an animal sanctuary for monkeys, for primates down in PE area, Monkey Land or Monkey,
yes.
Monkey World, one yes. of those. Sent me a lovely message and asked me to bequeath it to them, and they'll start a museum for the monkeys that people can share and have a look and. See the animals and that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
So you're thinking about that.
Oh, very cool.
I think it's just very cool. They can have the stuff. Trust me, plastic. My brothers want to melt it all down and bury me in a plastic coffin made of my plastic money.
But Kevin, do you have space to display this stuff in your house, or do you just have it mostly packed away?
I'm actually in ISO bubble.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because of the COVID thing, which we'll talk
right.
about. But,
okay.
In my house, I've got two homes. So I've got this place. I've got tons of space. I can put them everywhere. Right?
Yeah.
I won't. But I have a bat cave at my house. So the bat cave has a whole wall unit that's displayable. But that's for the bigger ones. We talk about bigger ones when we talk about big.
Wow.
That's George from Rampage. And I've got all of the George figurines. Okay, so he's pretty big. I've got a Kong here.
It's amazing.
There's
Kong.
I've got a Kong here.
Right.
I've got
That's
about
awesome.
20, I've got 25 of these figures. So these guys, when you put them up at the top of the cabinet, you know, they fill the whole wall.
Right.
So there's a lot of them. I've just got these guys in. I'll show you these. These are, I love them.
Yeah.
These are a company called Rebor.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Company called Rebor, and they've got four different ones. I've got the black one coming and another really cool one coming, but they're really strong plastic and they're heavy, you know what I mean? They're pretty cool. I've got a few I want to show you quick. All right, yeah. So I'll go as far as this extreme-wise. Extreme-wise, if you have a look carefully, you'll see the little monkeys on the,
yes.
on the trees. So I've got a whole tree line, literally, of different trees with monkeys on them. Okay.
That's phenomenal.
That's my fun thing. Then we've got a Funko Pop shop where we sold Funko Pops. We made it as our secondary business because we all love toys during COVID. Okay. There's King Louis Funko Pop.
King Louis, yeah.
From
Jungle Book.
Something Tales. I don't know what that thing's from.
Yeah.
There's a fantasy gorilla from Paper, a company that makes things.
Amazing. My God.
And, so how do I do that? There we go.
And
then it's just crazy stuff. The last one I want to show you, which I really love, is one of the latest toys by Safari Limited.
Yeah.
It's a Galago that we have, our little bush babies.
Uh-huh.
So it's quite pertinent. It's a South African animal.
Nice.
And then one of the things that makes this thing incredibly, incredibly rare is that I have prototypes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's the prototype. Let me put it where the black is. Sorry, I'm suckling to get these things.
No, that's
the
perfect.
Prototype.
That's it, yeah.
Okay. and that's the toy that came out.
Oh, my God. So you've actually got the... Now, the prototype must be worth a lot of money because nobody has those, right?
Yeah, it is. It's really, really rare. So, you know, they probably make about 8 of those impressions and that's it. And they choose which one they want. So, yeah. My all-time favorite piece that I've got from the monkey side is I saw a picture of lead figurines.
Yeah.
About 15 years ago. And one of the collectors said, he's sure he's seen that in plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 15 years to find, and it's that figure.
That's the one.
It's an arbitrary, that's the one. This is probably the rarest figure I've ever seen collected ever. This one is a piece of horrible little brittle plastic.
Yeah.
But it comes from France, and it's from a company called Lalit. They also made this one, this little bugger.
Right.
These are very rare. Okay. And the company called Lalit made these things, and that is the only time that's ever been seen. None of the collectors have ever seen it. We had a poll on it on one of the groups, 40,000 people, never seen it before.
So, Kevin, how long did it take you to get that, and where did you eventually get it from?
I found it arbitrarily. It's ridiculous. It is a lovely hobby. So I'm only allowed one Friday night a week, or my wife will kill me. one Friday night a month, at least, sorry.
go on.
I'm only allowed on Friday night, so I sat in my bat cave for 4 hours, and I just like, look for toys. And I found it on an arbitrary site in the interweb. It was great.
Unbelievable.
Oh, good fun.
That's so.
You know, I've got so much to show you. I mean, I've got 6,000 figurines. I can carry on for.
Do you draw the line anywhere? I mean, like you know, once you get to 6,000 figurines, and I know you've said that people who collect hundreds of thousands, but do you draw the line somewhere? Do you go, okay, well, this is enough now. I can't do this anymore.
It's a good no. Sorry.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Like, are you going to draw the line during the show, Gareth? No. Yeah, it's like your addiction. This is my addiction. I'd rather do this than do drugs. Just put it that way. Yeah.
Well, I'm blown away. Collector Mania, of course, is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And if you're a collector or you have some interesting things, I mean, this is absolutely one of the most bizarre, niche things that I've ever heard of that Kevin collects. You can get in touch with us at contact@cliffcentral.com. We would love to feature you on the show. And I just love the passion. I mean, I can hear how much you absolutely love what you're doing here. And it's so cool to have such a great collection. So tell us quickly about your experience with COVID, because I think this is quite interesting. You actually had COVID-19 double pneumonia, and you were in hospital. You were in ICU. Tell us about your experience there.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, the first thing I wanted to say about this is that I've got two people to thank, if I may.
Yeah, go for it.
Firstly, my sister was my carer the whole way through the recovery process, which I'll explain to you quickly. And I'll just give a shout-out, Leanne Silver. Yeah. Thank you so much. And my general manageress at my shop, because my brothers run my shop when I'm not there. But my general manageress was also at the reins a bit.
Yeah.
And her name is Daniel Swanepoel, Nie-Groble. Thank you so much, love.
Good.
So that aside, and I said Daniel said I'd be killed if I didn't mention it, just for the record. listen, I what I try to do is, and I'll preface this with this. I wanted really, you know, when I went to hospital, it was the most petrifying thing I've ever gone through, and I've gone through quite a bit. It is, unless you go through it to vocalize it, to put it into words, to try and explain the mechanics of what your psychology does, your body does, your physiology does, your the doctors do, the nurses' attentiveness, the angels, let me tell you what. I mean, it's just the physiotherapists. A little lady that comes in to put the needles in your veins to find the arterial blood and it's quite amazing. And there's a group of things that happen when you're in hospital, which I wish I could share. I don't know how to, but I wish I could share a little clip of video again when somebody left the ward. At 3 a.m. Are they leaving the ward because they're being discharged or have they died? Okay, right. You don't know, right? And then the Men in Black, picture Men in Black with a blue screen and this flashing light that does this and it goes, and they are de-virusing the piece of room, and you wake up and you see that, and it is, man.
So how did you end up in hospital in the first place? Because, you know, we've heard of people who've got COVID, and then some of them are absolutely fine. They don't even know they have it. And then there are people who just get really, really sick. How did you know you were in trouble?
I didn't. And it's a very fair, very good question. And this is the reason why, what I wanted to say was, I'm trying to reclaim the time. And that's why I really wanted to have a talk on radio, because I've done videos in my recovery process.
Yeah.
But to tell you what happened, I went to my doctor. I started feeling shitty on a Tuesday night, the 25th of May. I went to my doctor on the 28th of May, and I had sore kidneys, sore skin under my kidneys. Okay,
right.
And sore inner thighs. I didn't have a headache. I didn't have loss of smell, loss of taste. I didn't have a chest issue. I had nothing. I just felt shit, and I had bad kidneys and inside thighs. So because of I was weeing a lot, being like a trooper. Okay, so my doctor said to me, well, that's at your age, it's probably a prostate infection, and the prostate infections can bugger you up like food.
Right.
Okay. So he gave me a bag full of the wrong drugs.
Oh.
And sent me back to work.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Right.
You know? I went to work. That was 10 o'clock in the morning. I went to work 3 o'clock that afternoon. I passed out in my shop. They rushed me to hospital. They did all the tests again and said to me, I don't have COVID. I've got a prostate infection. Go home. I went through the weekend to the Monday night. Okay. I was going through cytokine storm with the wrong drugs. And I went back to hospital for the third time. I've gone to see medical guys and demanded a COVID test. They gave me a COVID test, sent me home.
Right.
I woke up at 6 o'clock with her phoning me, the doctor on call, phoning me, telling me I've got COVID-19. I lasted until the next Friday. So that was Tuesday morning. I lasted till the Friday, and the Thursday afternoon to the Friday morning, my blood gas went down from 99 to the 3.6 or something ridiculous. I was blue.
Wow.
And I called my neighbor, and my neighbor's my best mate, he's my production manager, a production director at work.
Uh-huh.
I called him and I said, in this block, we got these flats for the staff. I called him and I said to him, dude, I can't breathe. Go fetch me. And a big shout out to the community medics here in Tableview in Cape Town.
Uh-huh.
They were in my street at 5 o'clock in the morning, Gareth. I mean, they got to me in 3 minutes. They gave me oxygen. They stabilized me, got me to hospital. They admitted me. I then went for three. That was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I almost died. They put me on all oxygen, and then I had a bad dip. And they put me on hot oxygen therapy. Okay.
Mm.
Now, let me explain what hot oxygen therapy is. I went snort hot water.
Oh, my God. Really?
Go snort hot water. It's like that. The reason you get intubated is because your body resists you from inhaling through your nose because it's like hot water.
My God.
Okay. All right. What happened with me was 3 years ago, I got told by my doctor I was going to die of a heart attack because I was a fat fuck. And to lose all the weight.
All right.
I had to lose all the weight. So I went and I got a bicycle. I changed my diet. I did intermittent fasting. I lost 26 kilograms.
Good for you.
And I got super fit. And one of the things, watching podcasts, I listened to Joe Rogan's one podcast, and he had a guy on there talking about nasal breathing and the amount of extra oxygen you get with your lungs under duress, okay, by breathing through your nose. But I practiced that on my bicycle for 3 years because I kept on training. I trained twice a day during the start of COVID when we were 100 days in lockdown, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so my ability to breathe through my nose with this hot oxygen stuff, you've seen my, I sent you the photos.
I don't know.
I've got a piece of black hazard on my lung like this.
Oh,
but your
God.
Lungs are black. They see through.
Yeah.
Okay, the rest is white. And the white is the COVID taking over. I've got a piece this big of my lung that's keeping me alive on day 3. That's processing oxygen for my body. The hot oxygen, if you can take it through your nose, all right,
yeah.
You don't get intubated.
But isn't it amazing that you managed to do this nasal breathing and that you'd been practicing it effectively for like a good couple of months?
I didn't know it was going to save my life, mate. You know what I mean? I didn't know that was the linchpin.
So how long were you in ICU for?
10 days.
Wow. Okay.
I lost 10 kilograms in the cytokine storm. I was already thin. I lost 10 kilograms in the cytokine storm. I looked like a walking skeleton when I left the place. And I put it back on, trust me, because you've got to eat. The funny thing about chest repair is that you've got to eat protein.
Yeah.
So I documented my recovery after COVID. And the big thing is that there's so many things that people don't think of.
Yeah.
Right now, you're safe.
Right.
And you got medical aid. It cost 290,000 rand for 10 days in hospital. so have you got a medical aid? Have you got a gap cover on your medical aid? Because it's just cost me 15,000 rand in all the bullshit that isn't included, which is ambulance wards, physiotherapy, X-rays, your doctor afterwards that you've got to go and see, things like that, because you've run out of funds in your savings and things like that.
This is a bit of a wake-up call to anybody who doesn't have these things sorted out, who hasn't thought about them. I mean, many of us don't.
Here's another one.
Them, you know?
Here's another three. There's another three, Gareth. Your will, if you die, are you leaving yourself intestate? Okay, because you die in 20 minutes. It's just like,
and then who's going to get your plastic monkey collection, you know?
The government.
Yeah.
You with me? And then you've got life cover for your family, disability cover.
Right.
Because let me explain something to you. I've been in an ISO bubble. This is day 76 out of ICU. I've been out of this house 5 times. Three times I've been out.
But why are you still isolated? I mean, surely the...
Because I can do my work, obviously, remotely.
But
I'm 53. It took me a month and a half, almost 2 months, to start walking.
Jesus, bad luck there. Hey? You really got it hard.
Okay. Now, listen, I couldn't walk up my stairs without help for the first 40 days.
Wow, man.
It's an insane, insane disease. It just is insane. It just stops your lungs from working. Thanks for coming. Now, when I say disability cover, like salary protection, if you get what we call long-haul COVID, which is, you survive this and you come out of ICU, but you just have this lethargy. You have this, okay, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You can't use your lungs. You can't functionally do it. Okay, I've gone from, in the last 2 weeks, you want to know what rapid recovery is like. In the last 2 weeks, I've gone from being able to walk 10 meters and really wanting to pass out. I swear to God. Okay, walking 45 minutes on the beach in the sea sand. And walking, not sauntering, walking, breathing through my nose, practicing that whole effect, walking 22 and a half minutes that way and 22 and a half minutes this way for 45 minutes.
Apparently that's very good for you, not only because you can do your breathing and you can get outside, but also because you're getting a bit of sun, which people need too. Apparently that's a big part of this. Well, listen, I'm just really pleased you survived, if for no other reason that we could talk to you about your fascinating collection, and that it didn't
that
it didn't go to the government if you died. I mean, that would have been such a waste of time. Imagine some cabinet minister taking over your collection and having the world's biggest collection of plastic monkeys. I think that would have been hilarious. It's good to talk to you, Kevin. Thank you so much, and thanks for sharing your collection with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much for having me this morning.
Yeah, glad you survived.
Oh my God. One last thing, if I may say. You kept me alive being in ISO. Again, because this disease wakes you up at office 4, office 3, 5 o'clock, and then I'd switch you on and I'd watch you. That's how I heard about the collection. So thanks for that, guys. It's been a pleasure.
I mean, I'm thrilled that we could have been some part of that. Thanks so much. Very, very good to talk to you.
All the best.
Thank you. Kevin Silver, everybody, his incredible collection. And his survival story of COVID. I mean, it's quite something. Pretty busy.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Kevin. Pretty busy Monday morning, huh? But what an interesting guy. I don't know whether he was more passionate about his incredible COVID experience, which is not what anyone would want to duplicate, or his monkey collection. But I mean, both are just, you could see the guy's brimming over with enthusiasm. Leanne, we can't hear you.
I think he's just a passionate person.
Yeah, I'm
saying he's Cape Tonian day one.
I don't think that's very fair. At least
his passion's awesome.
At least if the government get his collection, they have a cabinet to put them in. That's so great.
Yeah. That's very good.
Well, very, very nice. Thank you for joining us this morning. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. It is 8 o'clock on cliffcentral.com. Have an awesome Monday and a good week. And I'm looking forward to Spring Day on Wednesday. Thanks to Mbulelo. Now we've got reasons to get ready to celebrate for Spring Day. Even if it's just a bullshit reason, we want to. Right? So let's get going. Cheers, everybody.
Sun's out, buns out.
Right. See you tomorrow, 6 a.m.
Cliffcentral.com.